And without further ado, joined now in the studio by Carver Mayer and constitutional law professor Lydia Lavelle, because we have got approximately 17 different constitutional, state constitutional and U.S. constitutional issues that the state of North Carolina is dealing with right now. First of all, thank you for joining us. Secondly, where do you want to begin?
Yeah, right. Well, I wanted to just follow up on a couple of comments you all were talking about the uncertainty as to when the election will be this spring. And it's hard to imagine there would be a decision made on March 14th. But yes, we have elections on March 15th.
So, right.
I mean, you can really imagine all of the, I think, challenges candidates as well as voters could make to that confusion and so forth. But I wanted to just mention something else, and that is kind of a trickle-down effect to local elections. And, you know, I'm thankful that I'm not on the ballot in March because I imagine everyone who's on the ballot in March, you know, is in a state of abeyance. Now, it does sound like at least some will go forward, but it still creates confusion.
Absolutely.
You know? And you know, I heard some talk here about how the folks in the General Assembly are kind of upset that this ruling came down so close to the March election. Well, you'll recall that this election has always been in May before.
Yes.
So if it were still in May, you know, it wouldn't have been as dire a consequence.
As big a problem, yeah.
And then lastly, you know, it occurred to me, you know, it affects polling locations when you have elections. So last night I started thinking about it, and I sent an email to our town clerk to, you know, or maybe it was this morning. Hey, let's be on alert. We might have to cancel a town meeting in June because Carbo Town Hall is a voting location.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and, you know, that brings with it early voting and sites and more expense. So, you know, I know this was certainly moving up the primary was an attempt to save some money, but it sounds like this is all going to cost a lot more money in the long run.
Part of the uncertainty is because the state lawmakers asked Chief Justice John Roberts for a stay of that earlier ruling, and we haven't gotten a yes or no from Roberts yet. Does that surprise you? I feel like at this point, if he's not going to do it, he should just say he's not going to do it.
Yeah,
right?
it actually really does surprise me. You know, and you don't want to. I don't think that the death of Justice Scalia would really cause the court to come to a screeching halt. But
right.
In some ways, administratively, it certainly has. And you know, not to say that that's a vote he would have been a part of, but just to say that, you know, that's something that's kind of really important too.
Yeah. Absolutely, because if Justice Roberts today says I'm not going to issue a stay, then okay, we'll have an election on June 7th.
Yeah,
done deal. But
well, and I think today was the day they were supposed to draw up the maps by. So
right.
It might be that might be his tickler deadline.
Maybe, yeah.
So that he may do something at the end of the day today or on Monday based on that initial kind of, you know, deadline he gave the General Assembly.
Speaking with Carver Mayor Lydia Lavelle, that is one court legal fight that's going on. Another one on a state level, at least, has to do with retention elections. We were talking about this. General Assembly passed a bill last year changing the way that state Supreme Court justices are reelected. If they're on the court, they're running for reelection rather than facing an opponent. They face just an up or down yes or no vote. Do they stay on for another 8 years? That's called a retention election. Other states do it. California did it going back to 1934. I didn't realize that. I did some research earlier this week, but the lawsuit that was filed says, well, that technically changes the nature of the election. It's no longer an election. It's a referendum. And if it's a change from an election to a referendum, that requires a state constitutional amendment, which has to be approved by the voters. And the Superior Court judges are apparently going to rule that that is correct and thus strike down the retention election law that was passed last year. Is that's accurate, right?
That's accurate.
Up to that point?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so this is really, really interesting to me, the nuances here of this retention election. And as it developed, and I looked a little bit more into the complaint in the brief filed by the plaintiffs, who seem like they're the ones who are going to prevail.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, also first, Aaron, is this what I think is interesting is the manner in which they had to even attack the constitutionality of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a new law the General Assembly passed, they had to convene before a three-judge appointed panel in Raleigh to challenge anything facially unconstitutional. And so, whereas, and frankly, that's another law that might be unconstitutional. That's another law that might be challenged. This inability to bring an action saying that something is facially unconstitutional, you can only bring it in Raleigh. Anyway, that's another matter.
That's a whole other thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So in any event, that was the hearing that was held or whatever, this motion for summary judgment. But I would say, you know, a couple points about it, and you are accurate that the reports are that the judges are going to find in favor of the plaintiffs here. But quite simply, you look at the North Carolina Constitution, and it, as you said, very clearly says, shall be elected. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's been that way since the Constitution was written. And really interestingly, you know, I mean, I've been around the law for a while, and there have been several attempts over the years by different groups, by different members of the House and Senate, to go towards some type of a retention election, because it has merits done the right way. But every time that a bill has been introduced, 34 times in the General Assembly to provide for a retention referendum, and every single bill of those 34 bills was in the form of a constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
And you know, regardless of the party affiliation, too. And regardless of whether it was the governor who proposed it, the courts, the Bar Association, or whoever. And if we hear the folks defending this bill say, well, you know, other states do it. You know, you just talked about California.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 19 other states that use a retention referendum. But in every one of those states, their authorization comes from their state constitution.
Yeah.
Now, there's I read in the brief that there is one state, I believe it's Tennessee, that does not come from the Constitution, and they distinguish in this brief this outlier state, and actually even the Tennessee, the way they have done it, it was challenged in court a number of times, and they actually recently reformed their Constitution so that it would match up.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a really interesting for one thing, the special Supreme Court that had to hear that case, they had to appoint.
Yes.
A special Supreme Court to hear that case.
Yes, yeah.
Because
it's the Supreme Court justices who
right.
are affected by it, so
right,
it's a conflict of interest. You have to have a whole other bunch of judges. Is that going to be the case here, too? Because if the state appeals, it goes to the Supreme Court.
There was an article I read that said it is unclear as to whether Justice Edmunds, who is really the one who is affected by it this year,
yes.
it is unclear whether he will. Well, I think it's very clear that mm-hmm. it's a conflict of interest for him
yeah.
to hear this. But I agree. I think, in fact, there's an argument to be made that it's unfair
Everyone,
for the entire
yeah.
court to hear it. And,
yeah.
and that's kind of a, this is kind of a, this was part of what was created, too, with this law of this special three-seat panel
right.
hearing this in Wake County was that the appeals go directly to the Supreme Court. They just bypass the Court of Appeals.
Yeah. And this is actually the same issue with the congressional district lines and the state House and the state Senate district lines in the first place. 90% of the problem is that the lines are being drawn by the people who are then running for the election in the seats that they're drawing for themselves. And it's kind of the same thing here. If it's a conflict of interest, then someone else needs to do it.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So there are really some problems here because you feel certain that, you know, having been informed, you know, and actually I think, you know, so the defendants, and of course the defendant, the major defendant in this is the State Board of Elections,
mm-hmm.
and then the executive director in official capacity. But in essence, they have been notified that the panel is going to rule in favor of the plaintiffs. So they certainly would appeal.
Right.
And
right.
and so it'll be interesting to see how that is going to be handled when they appeal. You know, I would say, you know, it seems like the another state that has had to face a very, very similar type, although not directly on point, a very similar referendum. Again, the governor had to appoint a special Supreme Court to hear it. And really, I don't think you could say the North Carolina Court of Appeals has a conflict of interest, but I assume to be probably just, you know, completely transparent, it would seem that those judges might be judges from elsewhere that they
yeah,
would be appointed.
Yeah.
But boy, that would be really interesting to see where you would draw those judges
and
from.
And where
that,
you get the
that.
Judges from, yeah.
yeah
Is
yeah.
the process of selecting them going to be transparent? We're speaking with Carper Mayor Lydia Lavelle about all of these constitutional issues. What is your take on Justice Scalia and the process, or, you know, which hasn't actually begun, of filling that seat in an election year?
You know, it's when I was reminded that Justice Scalia himself, he was approved or voted on or whatever, however you want to say it, to be on the Supreme Court, I think unanimously.
Yes, almost, if not unanimously.
As was, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It was not controversial. And when we see how different it is today, it's really, you know, it's, I'm not sure what it says. It kind of is indicative of the rancor we see, I think, just in national politics in general. I think it's, you know, unconscionable to think that that we should have a seat sit vacant for 11 months until a brand new person becomes president next January 20th. The idea that you should keep a Supreme Court seat open that long, when the sitting president still has almost 25% of his term left. He has every right, and it's obviously his or her, you know, duty to put someone forward. I think that the Republican members of Congress, you know, I think that there have been some that have come forward and said, you know, well, you know, we need to see who's nominated. We need to move this forward. I think, honestly, it's a hard position to defend, to say. It's one thing to, and I don't agree with this, but it's one thing to stonewall federal judges at the circuit level, at the district court level. I mean, that's bad enough.
Right.
But we're talking about, you know, the United States Supreme Court. I mean, what if next month something happens to another member of the court, and then another? I mean, it could happen.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
So what are you going to say? Are we going to say we just leave them all vacant until next year? I mean, it's, so, you know, I guess I'm of the opinion from the commentator, of the commentators who say that, you know, it would probably serve President Obama well to appoint someone who is palatable to to the Republican side, but, you know, on the other hand, you know, it's who appoints now or who appoints later.
Right.
So, you know, presuming, you know, who knows who's going to win the presidential election.
Yeah, and presuming it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, there's nothing saying the Senate can continue to stonewall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to. So, you know, the idea that, you know, whoa, we need to get Obama. So, you know, I mean, it could be Hillary, it could be Bernie, it could be someone else doing the nomination. But in any event, it seems to me that stonewalling and not having that process go forward, I think a majority of the American people would still think that that was really childish to not do that.
Yeah. And I think there's a distinction to be drawn to between the constitutional requirement and the constitutional duty. Like the actual U.S. Constitution actually doesn't say too much. It doesn't say there have to be 9 justices. There could be any number. There have been a different number before. All it says about the Senate is advice and consent. It doesn't give a time frame. It doesn't say you have to do this, you have to do that. But there is a constitutional duty. There's an assumption in the Constitution that the president and the Senate are going to work together and cooperate on this, and the president isn't going to abuse his authority and try to nominate 6 justices at once, and the Senate isn't going to abuse its authority and stonewall every single nomination forever.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, because even now with 9 justices, there are instances where maybe only 7 can vote,
right,
or whatever, because, you know, we have a conflict of interest of some sort or some reason, someone just appointed didn't take part in it. But even more than that, too, you know, so one is the delay of 11 months would be just ridiculous anyway to have it empty. But number two is there are a lot of cases that need to be decided. Mm-hmm. And there's already a lot. Even if someone were appointed next month, which wouldn't happen, there's already going to be, you know, requests for rehearing. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be like trying to determine how to go forward with cases that were heard by Justice Scalia or not. It's really kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's another mess. Sorry.
Is there anything that's not a mess?
Well, today, the weather was beautiful.
The weather
today.
Is beautiful today. It's going to be really nice tomorrow. There
right,
we go.
Right.
We got to let you go, but thank you so much, Carver and Mayor Letty Lavelle.
Thanks, Aaron.